No Jeffrey Simmons, no Bud Dupree, no problem. No 100-yard effort from Derrick Henry, no problem. No more than 17 points scored for the third consecutive game, you guessed it, no problem. Not for the Tennessee Titans, not for these Tennessee Titans, that is. It was who improved to 6-3 with a 17-10 victory over the Denver Broncos Sunday at Nissan Stadium. It was at times ugly. It was at times exciting. In other words, it is what we have come to expect from these Tennessee Titans this year. And to look at that game and to look ahead to a short week, we are here with the latest episode of Believe in Titans podcast, brought to you by Bet Online. We being, of course, former Titans cornerback Denard Walker. Denard, good day, sir.
No problem.
No problem. And John Glennon of All Titans at SI.com, good day to you.
Good day to you lads as well.
And I am David Beauclair, and also of All Titans at SI.com. And once again, this is the Believe in Titans podcast, brought to you by Bet Online. Basketball is back, and BetOnline remains your number one source for all your sports betting needs this season. You'll always find the latest odds, team matchup info, player news, and game trends at BetOnline. And as your continued source for all sports wagering information, BetOnline features live betting, free contests, and giveaways all season long. It's always the fastest and easiest way to bet all your favorite sports and events, whether that's NFL, NBA, NHL, MMA, tennis, boxing, or even golf. Head to betonline.ag to join and receive your 50% welcome bonus with your first deposit. Make sure to use the promo code BELIEVE, that's BLEAV, to receive your rewards. BetOnline, where the game starts. And we have to start with the defense, the defensive front in particular. I know, Denard Walker, you had to enjoy that show, particularly in the second half, when it seemed like Russell Wilson was just getting battered every time he dropped back to pass. How good a performance was that from the defensive front?
It was phenomenal. It was like the tale of two ends. The first half kind of scared me because I'm like, okay, they better pick it up. This is not looking good, especially in the secondary. But the second half, they turned it on. And, you know, I do a show on Wednesday with one of my buddy, Greg Leonard from ESPN Chattanooga. And he said it best, is that this team, they find strength in numbers. And once again, when you're talking about you without the big dog, Jeffrey Simmons, Bud Dupree, Christian Fulton, Amani Hooker, Zach Cunningham, and David Long went out in the third quarter. But then you can find those pieces in Mario Edwards Jr., Rashad Weaver, DeMarcus Walker. What a phenomenal game. Russell was under duress the whole second half. I mean, it was just a gritty performance by this team. And I was so excited to watch how they came out the second half. I mean, they set the tone, and this defensive front, I mean, with these three right here, I mean, they played lights out.
Yeah, it was interesting. First play of the game, Russell Wilson threw a deep ball to Jerry Jeudy that they might have completed had Jeudy not hurt himself making his cut. A couple plays later, they get a 39-yard pass to Kendall Hinton. In the second quarter, they score the game's first touchdown on a 66-yard pass. I mean, it was clear what Denver wanted to do, and defensive coordinator Shane Bowen finally made up his mind, like, okay, we're coming now. And for a little while started blitzing, and, you know, guys like safety Andrew Adams and cornerback Elijah Molden got hits on him along the way. Dylan Cole, inside linebacker, came one time, got a sack. They sort of lit the Broncos up a little bit, and then sort of took advantage of what they had done. And later in the game, just came with what they needed to, and kept getting home time and time again. John, Denard mentioned Mario Edwards. He's a guy in particular who stood out for me. Of course, DeNico Autry was good. DeMarcus Walker is a guy who showed up in May. Edwards was added after the start of the season. Is this just the Titans doing what we saw last year, you know, just plugging whoever in and finding ways to get good performances out of these guys?
I think there is some of that, certainly to some extent. I think there's probably a few factors going on. We got to remember, too, that Broncos had a pretty so-so at best offensive line to begin with. and they lose two starters, you know, during the course of the game, the center Graham Glasgow and the right tackle Billy Turner. Also got to remember that Russell Wilson these days seems to find ways to get sacked for whatever reason. You know, he's a very mobile guy, but he seems to work his way into sacks more often than out of them, you know, as opposed to earlier in his career. Nonetheless, tons of credit to the Titans defense. As you mentioned, so many starters out, so many big name pass rushers. You know, obviously Dupree and Simmons, and you know, we'll throw Harold Landry in there. He hadn't played all season, but you know, that's a factor too. So I think you've got to give Shane Bowen, you know, a ton of credit right now. When you're bringing in guys, you know, as Denard mentioned, and you mentioned DeMarcus Walker, Mario Edwards, and so forth. And you know, the stat that stood out to me most when I was looking at kind of the Pro Football Focus grades this morning, Russell Wilson had 49 dropbacks, right? Yesterday, 40 pressures out of the 49 dropbacks. So
That would be
just
more than
incredible.
80% for you
80%.
mathematicians out there.
That's very impressive for a journalist, Davey. Very impressive. But yeah, Autry had 10, Weaver had 8, Edwards had 6. So just and Walker had 5. So it was just relentless and really impressive to me that, you know, of all the games that the Titans have their most sacks under Mike Vrabel, 6 altogether, it's this one with no Simmons in there, with no Dupree in there either. So yeah, you got to give credit, I think, a lot to certainly the players, but also to the system and to Shane Bowen here as well.
Yeah, I mean, when are we going to learn? I'll admit, you know, when the Friday injury report comes out and Jeffrey Simmons is listed as out, I went, uh-oh. You know, how is this defense going to create problems up front? I mean, yeah, they're good players, but Simmons is the guy who's always getting double teamed, and even then he's blowing things up. And I just didn't think. I mean, sure, you thought they'll play okay. But I didn't think anything like this was possible. Denard, was there anything different that the Titans did up front that you saw, or was it was pretty much the same guys doing the same things even without Jeffrey Simmons in there?
Pretty much the same thing, a four-man front. And what's amazing is Russell was under duress the whole second half. What, it had 18 quarterback hits. I mean,
Yeah.
he took a beating. I mean, he took a beating, and just you could just tell the first half. I mean, it looked like in the first half, they at some point when they was getting those explosive plays on third down, he had time to pass. They did a good job. Now, Denver's offensive line did protect him well on third down and in the first quarter. But in the second half, it was like they just went and like, we're going to go get him. And I mean, Russell couldn't even really just sit in the pocket. You saw him scrambling half of the time for his life. That's when you know it's going to be bad for a quarterback, when he's running side to side. And Russell's one of the best quarterbacks in the league when he can get out of the pocket, because he can make plays with his legs. But Sunday, Russell in that second half looked like, you know what the heck with this ball? I'm just throwing it away, man. Because I mean, just the fact that, if you would have told me that Jeffrey Simmons was going to be out of this game, if you would have told me that Bud Dupree, you're talking about two of your premier players, and the fact that you held Denver to 10 points. I mean, David, look at this team, what
Yeah.
they've been able to do all season. I mean, talking about the streak, you had Colts 17 points, Washington 17, Indy 10, Houston 10, Kansas City had 9 points with a little over 3 minutes left in the game. And now another 10 points performance. This defense is just electric. It's like they're believing in themselves, and they're going out there imposing their will on, you know, teams like Denver and everybody else that they play.
And let's point this out too. They did it in sort of a different situation this time. Titans fell behind 10-0 in this game. You know, when the Titans have been at their best this year, they've gotten the lead and then just sort of sucked the life out of the opponent on both sides of the ball. In this one, they were down 10-0. It was late in the first half. They had no points on the board, and finally they get a 4-minute drive before the half. They go a little bit tempo. They get down there. They get the first of two touchdown catches by Nick Westbrook-Ikhina on the day. You know, it was sort of, it looked like Ryan Tannehill sort of came back to life in that moment. Tannehill, of course, back in the lineup after having missed the two games with an ankle injury. And John Glennon, I'll ask you, was that sort of Tannehill's best moment of the day, or what did you see from him coming back from the ankle there?
I didn't think it was very pretty early. That's for sure. And it wasn't only his fault, of course. But I noticed in particular on the second offensive series for the Titans, there was a pass over the middle, kind of medium to deeper shot, and he just stared down Nick Westbrook-Ikhine for about a couple seconds. It was clear he was going that way. Everybody could see it, and sure enough, he threw it into really heavy coverage, and he was lucky that it wasn't intercepted. He was 3 of 10 after that first quarter, so it wasn't a pretty transition from the injury back into the starting lineup. But yeah, I think that final drive of the second half, the Titans went up tempo. And I think that helped. I think there was that added sense of urgency. Adrenaline gets moving. Things are happening a little quicker out there. I think that helped Ryan Tannehill. I think, speaking of adrenaline shots, I think what else helped him also in that drive was scrambling. I think that was probably the last thing he had in mind going into the day was running. But he had to. The rush was heavy. Nobody was downfield open. And he winds up having to gimp out a run, for about 11 yards. And he told us afterwards that it didn't feel good, and that's no surprise. But again, I think that probably kickstarted the whole system, got things really moving in the right direction for him. And he was very much a different quarterback, I thought, in the second half, much more efficient. He winds up in the second half, I think it was 7 for 11, 155 yards, and of course the long flea flicker pass to Westbrook-Ikhine. So it took him a little bit, but certainly by the time the second half rolled around, we saw that much better passing game for the Titans than we had seen the last 2 weeks with rookie Malik Willis in there.
And it should be noted, believe it or not, that 11-yard scramble is Ryan Tannehill's longest run of the season.
It was also their longest run of the game yesterday. I think Derrick Henry's long run was 10.
Yeah, he said after the game, it didn't feel it's not like the ankle felt better as the game went along, and it didn't feel particularly good doing that. But that's the kind of play they had to have. They had to get points on the board before halftime because Denver was going to get the ball to start the second half too, and the fact that they were able to do that. Denard, John mentioned the flea flicker, the big play to Westbrook-Ikhine, which was the Titans' longest touchdown play of the season by a long margin. Coming into the game, the longest scoring play they had was a 29-yard run by Derrick Henry. Their longest touchdown pass was only 23 yards. Give us a quick breakdown, I guess, if you will, of the flea flicker, what it's trying to get the defense to do, and how well did it work in that situation?
Well, it worked. They scored.
Good breakdown.
Yeah, they scored. That was an old school flea flicker. That's like when I was a kid watching the old Cowboy games when Roger Staubach and Tony Dorsett days. But you know what? If you're Damari Mathis, the cornerback on that play, what were you thinking? Your eyes in the backfield. Listen, the ball is not going to come to you, the player. You got to watch him. But, man, that was what I call creative play calling. Todd Downing, I think, did a great job. And, David, you mentioned or you alluded to the fact that this team seems to find someone to step up even when your big-time players are not really performing, or you saw Denver, they really shut down the run against the King. They held them to, what, 53 yards and 2.8 yards per carry. Let's not forget, D, that this Denver defensive unit, they are good. They're ranked fifth in the NFL. They have some players. We talk about Surtain. Now, they traded away Bradley Chubb to Miami, but they can play. They came to play. They shut the run down and say, listen, if you're going to beat us, you're going to have to beat us in the perimeter. And what a great job for last week we were very critical of the receiving corps. And once again, a rookie by the name of Chig Okonkwo out of the University of Maryland stepped up, one reception, 41 yards. And Mr. Austin Hooper, what a great game, 5 receptions, 41 yards. And we saw a lot of production from the perimeter game. Traylon Burks, 3 receptions, 24 yards. And Robert Wood added a couple catches for 10 yards. So again, you saw the players, I mean, the pieces on the perimeter doing their job. But again, it was the Nick Westbrook-Ikhine show, the flea flicker, and not to mention right before half, the big play in the corner route. What a great throw by Ron, and what a great catch by Nick. Finished up 5 catches, 119 yards, 2 touchdowns. Nick Westbrook Akine, you played a heck of a game, my man.
Yeah, the first 100-yard receiving game by a wide receiver by any receiver for the Titans this season, and it comes after, of course, we talked about it last week. No receptions on 5 targets by the wide receiver group at Kansas City. So John Glennon, back to you. Is everything okay with the wide receiver group now? Should we believe in this bunch a little bit more going forward, or was this just a particularly good day for those guys?
I mean, I think it was certainly a good day for Nick Westbrook-Ikhine. There's no doubt about that. And I thought it was interesting, too. You know, we mentioned last week that they had the 0 receptions as wide receivers. And, of course, you know, Westbrook-Ikhine probably didn't help the cause of himself or the other wide receivers after the game, when basically he kind of, you know, more or less said, this is the first time I've heard any complaints about the wide receivers all year, which is a little bit of a naive comment, given there had been a lot of criticism of the wide receivers all year. But nonetheless, I thought Westbrook-Ikhine, maybe, you know, who is one of the nicest guys you will meet, one of the nicest guys you will talk to, seemed to have a little bit of an edge, you know, after the game against Denver, more, you know, kind of saying like, okay, I heard all this criticism all week, you know, this is what I'm delivering this time around. And it was a really good performance. And Denard, you mentioned, you know, the splash play, of course, was the flea flicker, but the really impressive catch, even more so, was that first touchdown catch, contested catch in the end zone against Patrick Surtain, has to go up, battle for it. You know, come down, tap the toes in there as well. So a really, really impressive, you know, work by Nick Westbrook-Ikhine. And, you know, he came as close as a really nice guy like Nick Westbrook-Ikhine can come afterwards to saying, like, you know, told you so kind of deal as well. So good for Nick Westbrook-Ikhine. In terms of the other guys, you know, I thought Treylon Burks, you know, it was good to see him back in the lineup. There were a little bit of kind of fits and starts, I think, for Treylon Burks. You know, the one kind of miscue that stands out to me, there was a play that looked like he was going to Dontrell Hilliard, you know, and all of a sudden, you know, Treylon Burks is cutting right in front of him, whereas maybe he should have kind of sat down in the zone instead of continuing a route and getting in the way of a pass to Dontrell Hilliard. So, you know, overall, some steps in the right direction for the wide receiver group, but, you know, they're certainly going to need more games like Nick Westbrook-Ikhine had, you know, in order to balance things out regularly, so that you know, on days like yesterday when Derrick Henry is clogged, you know, they got to be able to throw the ball.
And it should be noted, you know, we have had this discussion numerous times here leading up to the season about what are they going to do for a downfield threat? How are they going to take the top off the defense from time to time? And, you know, the good news is, if you will, now Nick Westbrook-Ikhine, keep in mind, this is a guy who was undrafted in 2020. And part of the reason is he's not the fastest guy in the NFL. I don't think he scares any NFL cornerback with his speed, but he's averaging 21.4 yards per catch so far this season, which is a big number. That's, you know, that's the good news. The bad news is in 9 games, he only has 12 catches, but he seems to be right now that guy who potentially can offer some of that. And maybe this is the game that gives him a little more confidence, gives Ryan Tannehill a little more confidence in him. You know, the flea flicker, you know, as Denard talked about it, of course, that requires a double move from Westbrook-Ikhine on that. And on his first move, the cornerback was looking in the backfield, bit, fell down, and you know, Westbrook-Ikhine was wide open then. But, you know, sometimes those can be the hardest completions to finish for both the quarterback and the receiver. They made that happen, and I'm sure everybody was delighted with that sort of big play. We should say, you know, Todd Downing giveth, Todd Downing taketh away then too in the fourth quarter, a 3rd and 2, Titans trying to run some clock, getting the field goal position, whatnot. They got a little creative there too, ran Malik Willis onto the field for Ryan Tannehill. He does a zone read, puts the ball in Derrick Henry's stomach takes it back out, and the ball ends up on the floor, the or on the ground. Titans turn it over. It could have been a a huge blunder in that game. The defense bailed the offense out there, forced a quick punt, but not what you wanted to see from Malik Willis. I think after a couple games experience, you kind of thought, okay, this is a good spot for him to go in and do those sorts of things and be comfortable doing them. And Denard, I'll ask you, did anything about that play look proper, look good, or was it just a bad moment for the offense?
It wasn't a bad moment. I remember that play. You know what happened? This is that the Denver front, their interior line, they blew the play up from the beginning. You want to stop the zone read. If you get pressure and you basically push that offensive line back, that's what stops it. And I'm going to tell you something, Denver front, they came to play. That's what happened on that play. I can remember when Malik went to go put the ball in Derek, right? So when he has that ball out to Derek, Denver already have about four to five guys in the backfield. So by the time he pulls it out, guess what he's looking at? He's looking at four guys in his face. So I can kind of empathize with him. I would have did the same thing. I would have dropped it and ran for my life. But what was impressive, and I just want to go back a little bit, and this just shows you the resiliency of this team. Their first six possession, they what, six punts.
Yes.
And what was it, two first downs? And that's what was so alarming about the beginning of the game. I'm kind of like, this is not going well. Six possessions, six punts, and two first downs. I'm thinking, this might be a long day for Tennessee. But again, they picked it up, and that a great play calling by Todd Downing. But I was a little worried. And what I love about this team is they played better in the second half, and we've been very critical on this team about their second half performance.
That's exactly right. And they, again, it comes down to finding a way. And as we've seen, we talked about the injuries going into the game. Injuries sort of piled up during the game too. That the good news was on Saturday, Elijah Molden was added back to the active roster after spending all of the regular season up to that point on injured reserve with a groin injury. He ends up leaving the game in the second half with a groin injury. You have to figure, his season could be done at this point. Caleb Farley, who all eyes are on Caleb Farley every time he gets on the field. And John, you wrote a story last week about the things he's been doing to try to be ready for another opportunity. He's got a back issue now. This is a guy who's had two back surgeries. He couldn't finish the game. This secondary, it's kind of been, Christian Fulton was out again with a groin injury, which is a problem earlier in the season. This is this secondary, John, ever going to be right this year, or is it going to be just piecemealing it together, you think, week to week now?
Yeah, I mean they've done a great job piecemealing it together. Guys like Terrence Mitchell. I think Terrence Mitchell probably wound up. Denard, you'd be best to comment on this after I'm done. But he seemed to be sort of the guilty culprit on the 66-yard touchdown pass. But besides that, obviously that's a huge play, an X play, a touchdown. But really, I thought he had a good afternoon. Besides that, and he kind of symbolizes what the Titans have sort of done with this secondary. Okay, so we don't have one or two or three of our high draft picks in there. Well, we'll pick somebody up off the street, whether that's Terrence Mitchell or off a practice squad, whether that's Terrence Mitchell, whether that's Andrew Adams at safety, we'll plug them in, and all of a sudden they'll start doing very well. I think, boy, just really unfortunate news for Caleb Farley, because it's been such a struggle for him so far, and you have to think. And in fact, I think Teron Davenport, ESPN, reported a little bit earlier this evening. It looks like he is done for the year. Again, it looks like he's going to need surgery for a disc. So again, looks like basically another season, gone without much improvement or without much on the field experience for Caleb Farley. There is, maybe on the other side, there's maybe a little bit of positive news in the secondary. The Titans had their, estimated injury report today, and Elijah Molden was actually listed as limited, which surprised me, because I, kind of thought the worst. As I said, that was his first game all year, and he leaves with the same injury that had been kept him out the whole season. But if he's listed as kind of an estimated limited in a walkthrough practice today, then maybe that's, a sign that he's not, done for the year. And Christian Fulton was also listed as limited too. So, and Christian Fulton practiced a little bit last week too. So aside from Caleb Farley, who I fear the worst, you know, I do think, you know, gradually these guys are working back and should be, you know, closer to whole here in another week or two.
Yeah, it could be that maybe Molden got scared a little bit if
yes.
he felt a little something during the game. As long a rehab as it was, Denard, you can speak to that. When you're coming back from an injury, do you sort of feel ghosts, if you will, like you think, oh God, I just heard it again, even though you didn't? Does that happen to guys?
Yeah, it messes with your mind. It's like you're trying to play a game, but you're also trying to combat what's going on with your body. That happened to me for the first one in 2003 when I went to Minnesota. I pulled my hamstring in training camp, and I mean, I blew it, and I heard this pop. And it took me about 8 to 10 weeks to get back where there was some kind of normalcy with my hamstring. But I was limping for the first 4 weeks when I got back. And when I got back in, David, the only thing I can think about was, is this thing going to pop again? Because as you open up, and unfortunately, the hamstrings, sometimes it gives a little bit and you don't know if it's a cramp. You don't know if it's getting ready to pull again. So now it's messing with your mind. It's a mindset, you know, it's a mindset that you have to get over. But it's just it's hard. It's hard coming back from an injury because you're not just going on the field and competing against another player. You actually have something that's hindering you, and you're trying to combat that by going out there and not think about it. So, again, this is going to be something that Elijah's got to pay close attention to, but it's going to be a while before he can kind of get over that hurdle and not think about that injury. But it's common. It's very common when you go out there to think, oh, my goodness, here I go again. It's just natural.
And of course, I should just mention real quick about Elijah Molden, too. You know, he's obviously been on IR already, so – Titans don't have the option of putting him on IR again if they wanted to sit him out, you know, four games. It's either, you know, he
either takes up a roster spot or yeah,
exactly, yeah.
And other also notable on the day's injury report, and again, there was no practice on Monday, but this is estimated. But particularly notable is the fact that Ben Jones was included. Now, Ben Jones can play through an injury like nobody's business, but this time he's listed with a concussion. So this is not about Ben Jones's toughness. This is about Ben Jones clearing the concussion protocol and doing so on a short week. Keep in mind the Titans play at Green Bay on Thursday night. This is a guy who has missed one game in his NFL career. I think one game dating back all the way to his high school career, in fact. And, you know, this could be a tough spot for him because he doesn't have any say in whether or not he'll be able to go. And we can't talk about injuries and not talk a bit about the pregame drama that developed too when during warmups kicker Randy Bullock appeared to hurt something, and all of a sudden you see Ryan Stonehouse kicking field goals and doing some kickoffs in the warmup, and you know, Bullock didn't, there was no kicking ultimately until that, for the Titans at least, until that touchdown right before the half. Bullock kicked the extra point, kicked the kickoff. It was a short kickoff. Ryan Stonehouse handled the kickoffs the rest of the day. But Bullock stayed in there for the other field goal and extra point that developed in the second half. He's listed with a right calf injury. His right leg, of course, is his kicking leg. That's another one that's going to bear watching. He was listed as would be out today if the Titans had practiced. So you know, and that's interesting because the last 2 years with COVID and everything, the Titans had always had a second kicker on the practice squad, sort of ready to go. That's not the case this year. If Randy Bullock can't play, John, will it be Ryan Stonehouse kicking? Will they have to bring somebody in off the street for that, you think?
I would tend to think it's bringing somebody in would be my guess. I mean, I've never seen Ryan Stonehouse kick, you know, aside from those kickoffs he had, you know, and almost always, I mean, especially the way the Titans play games, you know, everything is within 7 points or less or 3 points or less. And obviously field goals are so critical. I would think you'd have to bring somebody in that case. We'll see. You know, the Titans certainly have a long Rolodex of field goal kickers. I imagine after going through about 15 over the last 2 or 3 years, that's a little bit of an exaggeration, obviously, but you know, ex Steven Goskowski is still in town, isn't he?
Yeah, Steven Goskowski lives in the
Yes.
Nashville area, so.
Yeah, they can have old Big Steve drop by. Yeah, I guess, you know, in the meantime, hey, we need to give old Randy Bullock a little love, right? It's not every day you get to say, hey, that kicker toughed it out. Kicker played through pain and really produced, and you know, he made that critical bit. Darn's laughing over there. But you know, he did, even with that injury, made a critical field goal right near the end. So good for Randy, good for sucking it up and making all those kickers proud out there.
Yeah, I mean,
Sucking it up.
I mean, you're laughing, but I mean, think about it. That last field goal changing a 4-point lead to a 7-point lead. I mean, how much easier did that make things on the defense from there? That was a
First of
big
all,
moment, wasn't it?
how does a kicker get hurt?
Hey,
In warm-up.
he
In
was kicking at
warm-up.
least. I mean, he wasn't
Yeah.
screwing around.
And what are you doing in warm-up to get hurt? You a kicker. What
Practice
else are you
kicks.
doing? You're not hitting nobody. What is a
Yeah.
kicker? Well, you know what? When you just talking about this make my head hurt. How
It
does
was a
a
cold
kicker
day. Now,
get
it was a
hurt?
cold day in Nashville. It was 60, 70, 80 degrees most of last week, and all of a sudden it got cold Saturday and was cold Sunday. It was in the 40s at kickoff time. So maybe maybe Fat Randy didn't get stretched out enough. I don't know. Maybe that could have been the problem, but
No excuse for a kicker to get hurt. No excuse. You know what? That's just something I cannot talk about. How do you get hurt in warm-ups?
He's got to practice his kicks, right? He's got to stretch out. He's got to
That's what
stretch
they
those
do during the
muscles.
week. They don't do nothing else but go out there and kick and go inside and go play golf.
Man,
Does he
I
get
try to give
credit for
Randy a
toughing
little
it
bit
out
of
at
love.
least?
And,
How many kickers you know tough things out? Give me one.
Dustin
I was trying to
Hopkins
give Randy a
for
little
the
love. I mean,
Chargers a couple
that
weeks
works.
ago on Sunday night or
Yeah, that's
Monday
a good
night or
point. It's a good
but
point.
he was falling to the ground in obvious pain after every kick, but he made them all. So
There's
Randy
a new
Bullock,
breed of
not the
kickers
first
out
this
there,
year.
Denard. So tough.
Yeah,
All
that's.
right, we got a couple minutes left here. Let's look ahead real quickly. Green Bay Packers sort of saved their season Sunday night with a come from behind win against Dallas, going to Green Bay in prime time. I don't know what to make of the Packers, Denard. What do you think? Is this a particularly tough spot for this team, or is it, it should the Titans go in there feeling pretty confident about their ability to get a win if they do the things they do typically?
You know, it depends. It depends on which Packer team shows up. If that team shows up like the way that they played Dallas Sunday, then it's going to be a tough. You know, historically, when you look at Tennessee, when they go into Green Bay, it's a tough place to play. They got spanked. Was it like a couple years ago when they went into
Yeah.
Green Bay? They got
Got
spanked
in a prime time
in a
game,
prime
spanked.
time
Oh,
game.
yeah. And
Yeah,
then
and remember the game not too long before that, a few years back.
yeah.
What they right Green Bay ranged up about what 50 points or so in
Yeah,
that
they
game?
beat
Yeah.
them up.
Yeah. 55-10, I think that
55. Yeah,
one was.
right.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, I don't know. I mean, what will Matt LaFleur do? I mean, what are they going to do in this game? Are they going to run the ball against the Titans unit that is stingy against the run? What are you going to throw the ball to? Who? Who are your receivers? Who's going to hurt you? And not to mention, there's been a lot of rumors going on in Green Bay about possibly someone might be getting sit down soon by the name of Mr. Aaron Rodgers. Now, I don't know if that was just a little birdie or someone making that up, but if Tennessee goes in there and they do what they're supposed to do and stop the run and make Aaron Rodgers one dimensional, make this offense say, listen, we're going to beat you on the perimeter if you're going to beat us. That's what Tennessee mentality needs to be. I see Tennessee, they can dominate this game. But again, Green Bay did beat Dallas. And I'm sure Dallas was thinking the same thing Sunday when they went into Green Bay.
And John, we think about Aaron Rodgers first and foremost when you think about the Packers offense, but their run game is not too shabby right now either, right? I mean, this could be a battle of the run games when you get right down to it.
Yeah, it really could. Aaron Jones, 738 yards this year on the ground. He's averaging almost 6 yards a carry, 5.6 yards a run. A.J. Dillon has 454 yards, averaging over 4 yards himself. You look at the game against the Cowboys, Jones had 138, Dillon had 65 on the ground. So a pretty good test for, a Titans defense that we have seen be very, very difficult to run against, in the last several games. So, anytime you can shut down that run and make a team one-dimensional, you're generally in pretty good shape. And, if you're the Titans, you don't go in quite as scared of Aaron Rodgers as you have in years past, simply because he is throwing to the Alan Lazards and Romeo Dubes and Christian Watsons of the world. So a little bit different Packers team than we're used to seeing.
Well, we will see how it all plays out, and of course we will discuss everything about that game that needs discussing next week. Until then, thank you as always for listening. This is the Believe in Titans podcast brought to you by Bet Online.